Hello, I'm here during the lunch rush with Janice, who owns her own food truck.
Best cheesesteaks in town.
Janice traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for her food truck business. We're here where she needs us most.
They sure are.
We make it so easy for her to save, with customised coverage that grows with her business. Sorry, I just get so emotional talking about saving folks money.
Not this onion I'm chopping?
It's just so beautiful. Oh, yeah, nice, the onion.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
And honestly, I feel like what impacts me the most being online is actually not what happens in my own comment sections. It's what happens in other people's comment sections, which is why I think that internet etiquette and comment sections are something that concern everybody and not just creators, because all of us are in the comment sections. We're all reading what is being said. Everyone's impacted by that, not just the person creating the video, because we all resonate with people that we see online.
Dude, where are you? Pick up your phone. I'm going to a song party tonight and you're obviously invited, so call me back.
Okay, love you.
What's up, you guys, and welcome back to Emotionally Online, the weekly slumber party for spilling guts and sharing secrets, hosted by yours truly, the one and only Maddie Drosbeck. It is October. It is starting to really feel like fall here in New York, although it's literally only going to last like 48 hours and then we'll be back to fucking 80 degree weather again, because I hate it here, okay? I hate it here, meaning Earth. Hope that was clear. But I'm soaking up the actually nice weather while it's gonna last. I went up to the roof. I journaled this morning, did a little top of the month resets. And then I just stayed up there. I wrote some snail mail to my friends, getting into that. Oh yeah, we're bringing back snail mail in a major way. And then I got sucked down an internet dance rabbit hole, literally. I'm sure you've seen it. If you haven't, you need to. This rabbit and turtle children's competitive dance choreography that is going viral. Holy fuck. I have watched that video more times than I can count. I am truly so hooked on whatever they laced that video with. That is insane what those children are doing with their bodies. I don't know how they're doing that. Honestly, that is a kind of athleticism that has deeply impressed me. I need you guys to go watch the rabbit and turtle choreography and then imagine doing that. Like, imagine having the stamina to do all that. It's fucking crazy. Like, the lengths, the endurance that these children have is pretty remarkable. I don't think that I have ever at any point in time in my life been athletic enough to perform that routine top to bottom. That is fucking crazy. But as I was watching it, I was in my head like, this is literally exactly what I picture when someone tells me they go to CrossFit or they go to like a Barry's boot camp. I don't know what happens behind either of those two doors and I don't want to know. Don't tell me. But in my head, I imagine that you're just like running drills and going across the floor doing something athletic. And I would like to personally believe that at Barry's boot camp, they're having them do rabbit and turtle drills like those kids are doing across the stage, because that shit is bananas. When the turtles come in and they're dragging their legs behind them and then they put them forward and they start doing the crab walk and then they start doing crunches, like full body legs fully extended in front of them, like crunches. I was like, this is crazy. Is this not crazy? These kids need to be in the Guinness Book of World Records. They're like showcasing a level of athleticism that needs to be, they need their own category at the Olympics. Like, this is bizarre. This is bizarre and beautiful and I love it. And whoever choreographed that routine is sick and twisted in a very gorgeous way. And I will be watching that video over and over and over again. And please, I'm begging and pleading with you, if you haven't seen this video, go watch it, because it has brought me an absurd amount of joy this morning. And that's really what I need right now. I'm just hanging on to the little pockets of joy I can find. The rabbit and turtle dance, mega pocket of joy for me this today. Anyways, welcome to Emotionally Online, everybody. How's it going? How are we feeling? I'm clocking in at a solid 4 out of 10 today. Which is pretty good, all things considered. 4 out of 10 feels, you know, I'm good with that. I'm proud of a 4 out of 10 right now, to be honest. But I did want to start off today's episode just by thanking you guys for your kindness, your understanding, your warmth towards me, following last week's episode, which is obviously a really difficult episode for me to film. And I imagine it was a difficult episode to watch as well. Regardless of whether or not pet grief and loss is something that is near and dear to your own heart. I just want to thank you guys for how kind you have been to me. All of the messages, the links to books, podcast, you know, DMing me your own stories, telling me the things that helped you, the words that you clung onto, just offering me community in a time where I really need it. I am so appreciative. And I'm appreciative to those of you that shared your own stories with me and were willing to sort of open up that wound of your own, sharing an intimate part of yourself to try to lighten my load a little bit. That is not lost on me how heavy it can be to relive those things. And I just appreciate that you gave me the absolute honor and privilege of bearing witness to your lives as well. It's been really helpful for me. I think community is really the only medicine for this right now. It sucks. It's like, yeah, I feel like everyone calls me and they're like, how are you doing? And I'm like, bad. I'm like, not good. I've given a couple people an okay. A couple people have gotten an okay out of me, but it's my response to how have you been doing has either been bad or okay a couple times. So that's kind of it. There's not much more to say that I haven't already said. It sucks. It's going to suck forever, but eventually it will become such a familiar part of myself that it won't feel so hard to sit with. And I look forward to that day, you know. I look forward to that day. I was journaling this morning and a thought that I had was like, will I ever be able to say that like a new day was the best day ever? This is depressing. Sorry that I'm being so negative. But I am like, it will feel like a lie. Like if the next time I have a really good day and I think to myself, ah, today was the best day ever, I think I would think I was lying. I don't think that I would actually feel that. I think that I just feel like, how could any day be the best day ever if I am not spending part of it with her? And it's hard for me to imagine ever feeling like I'm not missing out on something ever again. I can imagine that things can be good. I can imagine that I can be happy, that I can have a great day, but it will never be the best day ever, ever again. And that's a weird feeling. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. And also, I know that many of you understand what I'm thinking and feeling right now, so I'm sure that's not an unfamiliar thought to have at this stage of things. Anyways, your kindness has meant a lot to me. I've also ran into so many kind strangers over the last couple weeks. It's kind of been crazy. I've had a lot of really nice Uber drivers. Like last week or the week before, I was coming home from a movie late and I took a car. And when we pulled up to my building, the driver asked me if I wanted him to stay and make sure that I got into my building safely. He asked it like in such a gentle and concerned way. I'm like, do I just look sad? Like, do I just have this sort of lost and confused and sad woman look on my face. Like, how does everyone know that they need to be nice to me right now? I don't know if it's just I'm getting lucky. If I look really sad, I enter a room and it's like, this woman has a dark cloud above her head. Like, I don't know what it is. I just know that everyone's been really nice to me. I thought that was nice when this Uber driver did that. I was like, that's really sweet. And I've noticed some drivers just do that. Like, they will pull up to your building and then they won't drive away until they see you get into the building safely. I've noticed that sometimes drivers will do that. But nobody's ever asked me if I wanted them to before and like seemed to check in on me in some way. Like, he was really quite gentle in his asking of me. Like, it seemed like he knew that something was wrong with me. And then a couple days later, I was in another Uber, and halfway through the ride, the driver turned around and he was like, "You look like you need a coffee." I was like, yeah, crazy week. You know, whatever I said. I don't remember what I said. And he literally pulled off into a Dunkin' Donuts and got me a coffee. I was like, what is happening? Why is everyone being so nice to me? What the hell is going on? So that was really nice. There's been a lot of people like that. Those are just like two examples of strangers that have been so nice to me. I talked about a couple of them in last week's episode too. Like, I just have been so moved by how nice everyone has been to me. Like, it's kind of crazy. It has really warmed my heart and made me feel like, oh, okay. You know, like, I am well supported and taken care of by people who know me and love me and, you know, spend time with me intimately, and also by people that I have only met in passing. Like, everything sucks in my own personal life and in the world at large. Like, it's just like a really fucking shitty timeline right now. And I think having little passing interactions like this with people just sort of restore a little bit of the faith that, you know, gets lost, that slowly grates away over time. And this is also why I will never, ever feel receptive to listening to when people say that New Yorkers are mean. That's crazy. That's literally crazy, because I have sincerely never in my life met anybody nicer than the people, the strangers that I come across living in New York. And this is verified research as someone who's lived here for 10 years. So I can't believe that. Can you believe? Every time I think about the fact that the stereotype for New Yorkers is that they're rude, I'm like, so how long have you been in New York? And were you being the asshole, actually? Like, were New Yorkers rude to you because you were being the weirdo? Have we considered that? Have we considered that New Yorkers are just truth tellers? Okay. And maybe you were being a weirdo. Have we considered that? I also had an insane experience in the movie theaters after I picked up Mango's Ashes. I went to go see the movies. I went to go see a movie, and I had to go pick up Mango's Ashes. And I was like, let me just hit two birds with one stone. I will go do the difficult thing. I will just, you know, it was a day of doing a lot of painful things. And I was like, let's just fucking go rip the Band-Aid off. I actually think it was the day I recorded the podcast. So I went and I picked up her ashes. And then I went to Alamo Drafthouse afterwards. And I just watched a movie with her ashes on my lap. I didn't realize that the movie I had bought tickets to was a movie about grief, and that's my bad. Okay, that is my fucking bad for not looking into the, you know, plot synopsis of this movie. But I was just thinking that I was safe, that I was gonna go in blind, because June Squibb it was the leading actress, and I love June Squibb, and she is such good vibes. So I was just like, okay, this is gonna be good. I'm gonna go to the movies after having a really emotionally exhausting day, and I'm gonna sit with Mango's ashes on my lap, and I'm just gonna have like this really cathartic moment, which I guess it was a cathartic moment anyways. It was just a little bit more intense than I originally thought that it was going to be. So then there I was, and I'm sitting there, I'm picturing looking at me from like a bird's eye view, and I'm like, this is crazy. I'm sitting in a movie theater right now with my dead cat's ashes on my lap, watching a movie about grief, hysterically crying. If anybody in this theater knew what was going on right now, they'd be like, you are an interesting woman. Maybe not the choices I would make. And I would say, me neither. Me neither. Not the choices I would make either. But here we are. Sometimes you don't even understand the choices that you're making when you're making them. There's only like four other people in this movie theater. It was empty. Nobody was going to see this movie, which was part of the appeal. But there I was in the grief movie holding my dead cat's ashes in my lap. I was like, this is a little crazy. Hey, this is a little crazy, queen. But here we are. Live to tell the tale. Have started smoking weed. I know. Very unlike me. Because, as longtime listeners may recall, I usually don't like weed because it makes me nonverbal. And every time I've smoked weed around other people, I get really anxious because I go nonverbal and then I feel bad that I haven't said anything or contributed in an interesting way. Like, I start to feel guilty for not being a good conversationalist, and I just get really anxious about it. So I don't like smoking socially. And I've smoked by myself a couple times before, and I've never had a bad time smoking by myself. And this is when I really pinpointed what the problem was, which is that it just like socially shoots me in the foot. Weed for me is not a social drug. I have sincerely no fucking goddamn clue how people smoke weed and then go be social and have conversations. What the fuck is happening? And I think maybe the worst part about me when I'm high is that the whole time I will be convinced that I am not high. The whole time, if you ask me and you're like, Maddie, are you high right now? I'd be like, No, I'm completely fine. But then it'll be like 15 minutes pass and I can't lock into a single fucking thought. And I'm like, okay, wait, maybe I am high. I don't feel any different, but my brain, it just makes me stupid. It makes me dumb and sleepy. I will be sitting there thinking, no, I'm not high. And then 15 minutes will pass and I'll be like, whoa, I don't think I latched on to a single thought that entire time, because my brain is in constant internal monologue. There is never a quiet moment up here. Weed makes everything go away, but I will be like, it's fine. I'm totally not high right now, but it's just silence inside my head. And then I'm trying to have a conversation with people, but I really can't latch on to my thoughts as quickly as a conversation requires you to. I can text when I'm high, which I have discovered this week, but it's because there's more time in between responses. So I don't have to like really lock in. It's like I send one text, wait a couple minutes, someone texts me back. All right, I can read that, respond to the one. It's like it moves in slow motion with my brain. So texting is fine, but having an in-person conversation with someone when I'm high, that's what gives me anxiety, because I'm like, my brain is moving way too slow to contribute meaningfully. And if I can't contribute meaningfully, then I don't want to contribute at all. Like, I feel uncomfortable when I can't just like show up. Maybe this is a recurring thing for me, actually, because this becomes true for many things. This is kind of funny, actually, now that I'm thinking about it, because I said something last week about how I felt bad asking my friends to come hang out with me when I was having the worst day of my life, because I knew that I was such bad vibes. And they were like, shut up. You don't have to be good vibes right now. This is what friends are for. And I'm like, for sure. No, I also agree with that. And I would feel the same way about any of you. But for some reason, I just feel, I don't know. And it's the same thing. I mean, not the same thing, a very different thing, but similar. In that when I'm high and I can't contribute, I can't show up the way that I want to, I'm like, well, now I'm panicking. But I think it's also because I know that other people don't have that reaction. So other people around me are smoking and conversating like normal, and I smoke, and all of a sudden I'm like, thinking of nothing, frozen in time. Anyways, I've been smoking by myself a little bit because sometimes it's nice to just silence my brain for a little bit, watch a little reality TV, zone out, and go to bed. Because that's the other thing. Weed makes me so sleepy. How the fuck are you guys smoking in the middle of the day? I don't understand. But anyways, I found a use for it in calming my overthinking at the end of a particularly heavy day. There it has been helpful for me. If I just want a little bit of peace and quiet while I watch The Valley, while I watch Jax Taylor be a fucking menace, okay? My brain needs to shut up so I can listen to Jax Taylor's brain, okay? Because that's a scary movie. And it's the season, it's time, okay? We got to get those scary movies rolling. So Vanderpump Rules, I finished it. Now I'm on The Valley. I'm about to finish The Valley too. I know, I've slammed it. I'm probably going to start Real Housewives of Beverly Hills after, because it just feels, I don't know. I asked on Instagram which Real Housewives franchise I should watch first, and everyone was telling me either Beverly Hills or Salt Lake City. People clearly love both of them. They were suggesting Salt Lake City because it's only like 6 seasons, so it's easier for me to catch up on. Good selling point. But other people were like, well, if you want to follow the thread and stay within the Vanderpump cinematic universe, you should probably do Beverly Hills to learn more of Lisa's backstory. And I was like, you know what? I think that that might be what I do. Just to keep things organized in my brain, I go from Vanderpump to The Valley to Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, which is like 14 seasons. So I'm going to be there for a long time. And then once I'm done with Beverly Hills, I'll probably watch Salt Lake City. I'm clocked in, okay? I'm Bravo's newest unpaid employee, all right? I'm going to be here watching Bravo television for quite some time. So we've got time. Lucky for all of you, and for all the Bravo heads that maybe stumble across this, I am a, you know, veteran when it comes to reality television shows with a fuck ton of episodes, okay? I'm a Love Island head. I've seen every season of Love Island UK. I am no stranger to a 50-episode TV series and watching 12 of them, okay? This isn't my first rodeo. So, listen, I'll slam Real Housewives by the end of the year. I think I could slam 14 seasons of Real Housewives of Beverly Hills by January 1. Is that crazy? I actually don't know if I can do that. I actually don't know if I can do that, but I can try. A girl can dream. I saw such an interesting TikTok from Hello Teffy this week that I saved because I was like loving this deep anthropological research that's going on here. And what I'm talking about is the video that she made talking about the 3 kinds of best friends. And I love Teffy. I think she is so smart and so brilliant. I love her perspectives. I love her content. And this piece of content was no exception. I thought that it was brilliant. The understanding and breakdown that she came up with resonated with my brain. And of the 3 types that she laid out, I think that you are the different kinds of friends within different relationships. I think that I could pick out friendships in my life where I am each of the types. But I think I lean towards being 2 of the types more frequently. There's one that I feel I'm less of than the others. And I'm interested to see if you guys feel similarly once I tell you what they are. the three kinds of best friends that she lays out. Number one is the historian. They've been here for the long haul. They know your lore, know the history of you. They can remind you of where you've been and where you're going. They've seen you at both your best and your worst. They've seen you through multiple different phases of your life. They've known very different versions of you. They are the people who hold your story for you when you forget it. That was a quote from Teffy. Which I loved. And obviously this is a friendship type that really resonates with me, because a lot of my friends are people that I have known for a very long time. Ashley and I have been friends since the first grade. August and I have been friends since sixth grade. Kayla and Destiny, we've been friends since seventh. Like, there are many, many people in my life that I have known and loved from my childhood years. To those people, I will be a historian. And honestly, it's crazy to get older, because I think for so long I was like, you know, I have these friends from middle and elementary school who I've known for so long, and so I would be a historian to those people. But I think I'm probably also the historian friend to my friends from like college too at this point, which is kind of crazy. But like, we've been friends for 10 years and we've been so many different people in the span of that time, ages 18 to 28. So I'm like, I think that I would probably consider myself a historian friend for someone like Ellie too, who was my roommate freshman and sophomore year of college, which is crazy. Like, thinking about being a historian friend to someone that I met in college is crazy, but like, that's 10 years. That's a long time. That is a long time. The next best friend that Teffy talks about is the cheerleader. When you're scared to take the leap, scared to move into this next chapter, make a big decision, make a scary call, they are going to be the first person you pick up the phone and ask for the perspective of. They believe in you before you even believe in yourself. They will be the first people to, you know, help set boundaries on your behalf. You have a big audition the next day. You know what? Let's not go out late tonight. Let's make sure you get home early, get a good night rest, because I want you to succeed. I want you to show up as the best version of yourself. So I am going to show up for you in ways that make that easier, in ways that compliment you and push you to be the best version of yourself, the version of yourself that I know yourself to be. They are just ride or die in your corner, cheering you on, always want you to win. This person can also sometimes sugarcoat things, and that's not a bad thing. I think sometimes we need friends who are just gentle with us and let ourselves, you know, forge our own paths, figure things out on our own, and we just need someone to sort of cheerlead us while we go through that on ourselves, on our own. The cheerleaders just want to support you and see you win. Sometimes sugarcoating can be a part of that story, but that is not necessarily a bad thing. Sometimes we need the sugarcoating. Sometimes the sugarcoating tastes fucking good, okay? And then the third kind of friend that Teffy talked about is the truth teller friend. These are the people that will tell you when you are shrinking yourself for this person. They'll tell you when you're above this. They are accountability with kindness. Teffy says, honesty without compassion is cruelty, which I totally fucking agree with. But the truth teller friend is someone who knows you to your core and will hold you to the standard of who you are. They are someone who's going to be brutally honest with you, obviously with compassion and tact as always, because that is a necessary part of being the truth teller friend, but they are not going to sugarcoat things for you. And I do think that you can sort of overlap and be multiples of these. Like, I think that the historian and the truth teller and the historian and the cheerleader kind of go hand in hand. The historian to me is just, that's kind of like on a different level, because you can be a historian truth teller and a historian cheerleader, but you can't be a truth telling cheerleader. You know what I mean? You know, like, we're not necessarily looking at an equal Venn diagram, but like a Venn diagram of sorts. Maybe the historian is in the middle, and then on either side you have the cheerleader and the truth teller. And I think in different friendships, you could be any of these people. Now, looking at myself, I think that I'm definitely more prone to being a historian towards the people that I've known for a really long time. And also the truth teller, both towards people I've known for a really long time and newer friends of mine. The cheerleader, I also think that I am sometimes, but I think more often than not, I'm going to lean truth teller, mostly because I'm always going to have something to say. Mostly because I do have a podcast, because I cannot stop fucking talking. So I do think that it is difficult. It is actually physically difficult for me to sugarcoat something. If you need sugarcoating to happen, I'm usually not the person to go to. And so I think when I really love someone, it's the older sister in me. I'm a little protective. I think sometimes I really just want to protect the people that I love and make sure that they see their worth and their value and how truly special they are. And sometimes it's hard for me to like let people go on their own journeys of figuring it out. I like have to be the person that steps in and is like, hello, sister queen. You are worth so much more than this. I have historically struggled when people close to me are dating someone that I really don't like. I have learned some lessons in that department when it comes to delivery. I used to be really not tactful in my delivery of criticism when I didn't like someone's partner. Lived and learned. This is something, you know, you go through that in your high school, college, early 20s. And I think that by the time you reach your late 20s, you've been through it enough times that you know how to have a more compassionate, honest conversation, which is how I feel about myself now. But there were definitely times in my life where I was a truth teller friend, but I didn't always know how to say things the right way, or I would be too protective or too passionate, and I needed to be a little bit better of a listener. But even then, I did lean towards being the truth teller friend. I am very rarely the type of person who will have an opinion and not say it out loud if I love you. If I love you and we're besties, like if we are best friends, there's no fucking shot that I'm not going to tell you that I'm a little concerned about your loser boyfriend. I am the first person who's going to say that. But I think as a truth teller, over time, I have honed this skill and I have become decent at having those kinds of conversations. Again, honesty without compassion is cruelty. Being honest is great. You have to be compassionate when you do it. But I think I have a harder time being the cheerleader with people that I know really well. That's not to say that you can't be that, or that the cheerleader friend is of lesser depth, because I don't believe that to be true. That's just not how I operate. But it's also a personality thing. Like I am, it really all goes back to like the eldest daughter of it all, because I really do feel like that's the best way I can describe myself, or where it feels like it resonates the most with me. When I was younger, I never felt like I was warm or sweet. Like I felt like I was always worried that people perceived me as cold, because sometimes I'm a little bit shy. And that was something I really internalized about myself in my early 20s. And it always felt uncomfortable to me, because I felt like a really warm and inviting person on the inside, but then I always felt like other people didn't perceive me that way because I was less social than they expected me to be. Or maybe, you know, people see you one way on the internet, and then they meet you in real life. And I'm not even just talking like having an audience. I'm talking like in college, people meet you on social media first, you know, through Facebook, through Instagram, whatever. You like connect more virtually before meeting in real life. And I always was like, you know, I'm just a lot. I'm an egg you got to crack open sometimes. in person. I think that I takes me a minute to really warm up. And I always worried that people thought that I was cold because of that. And again, it bothered me because it felt like a mismatch with how I saw myself. And also, there was parts of me that felt like I couldn't be described as warm or sweet because I also had a very clear, fiery side to me. I'm passionate. I'm ambitious. I'm protective. Like, I can be a bitch. I can be a bitch. Okay. And I know this about myself. So sometimes I would be like, am I warm? Like, am I a sweetie pie? Am I a lover girl? Because I'm kind of also intense. And then we get into like the too much of it all. And ultimately, I think understanding the like archetype of the eldest daughter, it all makes sense to me because I'm like, oh, no. None of these things contradict each other. It actually all makes sense. You are the oldest daughter. I am sweet and loving and warm, and I'm also protective, and I'm also larger than life. I'm the first one to ever do it, baby. Okay. I came up on the scene. I was the first one here. Okay. I set the trends. I invented what it meant to be a draw spec in the year 1997. All right. None of you bitches were here. It was only me. Me and my mega brain cooking up what it was like to be a draw spec sibling. Okay. I was the blueprint. You know, it's like you have this genetic warmth and sweetness towards these people who are an extension of yourself. You know, I was 2 years old when my first sibling was born. I got to watch all of my siblings come into the world. I have a genetic affinity towards them, this love and warmth and connection. And also exteriorly, I am deeply protective of them and can be kind of hardcore and also a bitch to other people who fuck with them, and also sometimes to them, because at the end of the day, we are siblings and siblings fight. You know, when we were kids, we didn't really fight now. Well, that, let me not get ahead of myself. But I think the vibes of an eldest daughter really also toe the line between this like sweet, introspective, towing the line between both generations, being the point person for your parents and also for your younger siblings. You have this warmth to you and this lovey-dovey side, yes. And also you have this harsher, more intense part of you as well. And neither of these things contradict each other, but you might feel that they do. I have spent so much of my life feeling like a walking contra fucking diction. And it feels so good to now as an adult be like, these things actually don't contradict each other at all. And I can be a soft-hearted, emotional lover girl and also be bold and direct and ambitious and larger than life. And in many ways, these things make complete fucking sense. But I think for a lot of my life, I felt like they did contradict each other. Anyways, I don't remember why I got on that tangent, but surely whatever it was important. Anyways, the thing that Teffy lands on at the end was that one grounds you, one expands you, and one keeps you honest. And she said that you need to have all three kinds in your life. And if you look around at the people around you and you don't know, or you feel like you're lacking in one category specifically, there's your focus. That's what it is that you're looking for. Honestly, Ashley would be a good person to talk to about this, because Ashley is definitely a historian friend to me, but she's also definitely been a cheerleader friend to me as well. And I think I get this like deep understanding, knowing of me completely, being able to give me great and honest advice because she knows me better than literally anyone else. And she is also consistently the person who is in my corner rooting for me over every other living person. And that's not to say that Ashley isn't also a truth teller friend. Maybe Ashley's just all of them. Because she's perfect. And she is. Ashley Olufsen, you are perfect. A message from me straight to your ears, if you're listening to this. Everyone is all three, but which two are you more often? And I feel like I'm probably more often the historian and the truth teller. And I feel like Ashley is probably more often the historian and the cheerleader. But Ashley, if you're listening to this, let me know what you think. Okay, thanks. And you in the comments that are not Ashley Olufsen, let me know which ones you resonate with the most and what your thoughts and feelings and reflections here on each of the given archetypes. Okay? All right. Let's do a couple of audience submissions before throwing it on over to the post show. I know that you feel a lot more confident about yourself than you did in your younger years. Being online a lot and having platforms, how do you tune out other people's negativity? When it comes to negative comments referring to your body, weight, etc. When I'm online, people are very nasty in the comment sections and horrible. And I have a hard time tuning that out and feeling confident in myself. I see a lot of body shaming online, and I mean a lot. I have a couple of answers. Number one, I think that the older that I've gotten and the more secure in myself and my perspectives, my beliefs, what I believe is morally right and wrong, the ways that normal, well-adjusted, kind people speak to other people on the internet and those who don't, like the more secure I have become, not only in my physical appearance, but also in like the values that I think people that I would value the opinions of would have, the more secure that I've gotten on those things, the less things like that have bothered me. To be honest with you, the comments on my body that people leave have really not impacted me for a while. And it's just because I think that to be the kind of person that comments on someone else's body in the way that people have done to me, I think you have to be truly so rotted. I don't know anybody in real life who behaves like that or who writes nasty comments to people they don't know about their physical appearances. I don't know people who do that. So I'm not going to start valuing the opinion of random strangers on the internet who do behave that way. Ultimately, I just find it embarrassing. Like, I think it is so juvenile and just beneath me as a person. So the body comments don't impact me. However, if I've had a horrible day and maybe I'm having a bad body image day and I'm just feeling generally a little bit more sensitive, and then I read one, I might have a moment where I'm like, oh, fuck. Awesome. Yeah, awesome. And it'll upset me and I'll, you know, maybe screenshot it and send it to one of my friends and I'll yell about it for 15 minutes and then I'll be over it. It's like I can be in a better place in my life where I know who I am. I know what I believe in. I know the kinds of people that I want to value the feedback of and those that I don't. And still, if I'm having a bad day, these things are going to impact me. And I think that would be the second thing that I'm going to say is just that you don't have to expect yourself to not be impacted by other people's nastiness. You don't have to be unaffected by those things. I think it's actually good to be affected by it because it's just like a check-in of your own moral compass and the things that you believe in. It's the world giving you an opportunity to show up for yourself. It's not a bad thing to have a reaction or to be hurt when people say and do mean things to you. You don't have to run away from those feelings. Obviously, you want to get better at, you know, standing firm in what you believe and the opinions you have about yourself, valuing your own opinion over the opinions of other people's. But just because you do that doesn't mean that every single time you're going to be able to just brush past it. There will be times where you read a nasty comment and you do internalize it. But honestly, for me, I mean, the comments not about my body are usually the ones that I start raging out about. And I love deleting things. I do. I love it. I fucking love deleting things. It's awesome. My thing is that I only delete nasty comments. So, and even if I was deleting more than that, guess what? It's my fucking corner of the internet. I can do whatever the hell I want here. Okay. If you want to talk your shit, you can go ahead and make a YouTube channel. All right. If you want to talk your shit, you can go ahead and put your face on something. But most of the time, these people, they have no desire to like actually put their face to the things that they're saying. They just want to like yell into the void and ruin someone else's day because they have very little going on in their lives and they need this. They need this to feel good about themselves. But I'm a big fan of the block button, huge fan of deleting things that are just simply not allowed in my corner of the internet. And honestly, I feel like what impacts me the most being online is actually not what happens in my own comment sections. It's what happens in other people's comment sections, which is why I think that internet etiquette and comment sections are something that concern everybody and not just creators, because all of us are in the comment sections. We're all reading what is being said. Everyone's impacted by that, not just the person creating the video, because we all resonate with people that we see online. Which is also why I'm a heavy policer of my comment sections when I can, because I know that there are other people reading them that resonate with me, that look up to me, that feel similar to me. So seeing someone say nasty things about my body or, you know, whatever else about me, that's not only a dig at me. That doesn't only impact me. That also impacts people that see themselves in me, that feel like they resonate with me, that feel like we have things in common. I honestly feel like the things that impact my own self-esteem or the things that rattle me are things that I see in other comment sections that are less wonderful. Like if you look in the comment sections of my content, like 99% of those comments are going to be good. 99% of them are going to be kind and thoughtful and beautiful. And there's the, you know, occasional 1% of people who are just nasty and weird. Or if I have a video that blows up beyond my audience, then those comment sections are going to be the wild, wild west. But for the most part, like this corner of the internet is one that is safe, and people who are like-minded have found my content. The people who consume this content are the people who want to consume it. And maybe that's more true for long form content, because if you're sitting through, you know, 45 minutes to an hour of content each week, assumably you like it. And if you don't, and you're watching it anyways to be a hater, you are a real weirdo. And at the end of the day, like, I win every goddamn time, because if you hate me and you're spending this much of your life consuming me, that's a fan. You are a fan, babe, and I don't know how to help you with that. But I think with short form content, you don't have to commit that much of your time to consuming content you dislike in order to be a hater. This is why I hated TikTok so much, and why I would always leave that app being like, oh my God, the world is bad. Everyone is bad and nothing is good. And I would be so doom and gloom. And it's not because of what people would say to me on TikTok. It was in observation of what was happening in other comment sections on TikTok and seeing like the worst take imaginable about body image. And then seeing that video has like 40,000 likes and just thousands of comments of people saying the most fatphobic shit you can imagine. Like, that was the stuff that bothered me, because I was like, oh my God. If I was just looking at my corner of the internet, it's like the rogue person that I can be like, ew, what a loser. This worm that found its way into my comment section. Ew. But then on those TikTok comment sections, I was like, oh my God, like, I'm the minority here. Like, this is unsafe. I'm in a comment section with 40,000 fatphobes. This is the bad place. Like, this is not good. So I actually feel like my sensitivity on the internet more comes from other corners of it and less policed comment sections generally short form comment sections, to be specific. Because I just think that there are some real brain dead haters on that application. And to be honest with you, the only thing that has helped with all that stuff is limiting my amount of time on those kinds of platforms, getting ahead of my screen time, not spending that much time on my phone in general. And going to therapy and being able to talk to someone about the things that are weighing on me and the things that are influencing the way I feel about myself and breaking down why I was impacted by, you know, something I read online or saw someone say and how that connects to something else that's happened in my life, like breaking down why I am triggered by the things I am triggered by and then learning how to feel more power over those sections of my life or those memories, whatever it is that trigger was connected to. Therapy has been big for things like that. But yeah, kind of a three-pronged answer here. Part of it is grounding yourself in what you know to be good behavior versus bad behavior, the kinds of people that you would take feedback from and the kinds you wouldn't. Allowing yourself to be hurt and to feel offended by people being nasty online. You definitely don't have to put on a brave face and act like you're totally unfazed by it. That would be kind of weird if we were. I think it's normal to have a reaction to things. And then like leaving the weirdos to be weird in their corner of the internet and letting yourself consume content that makes you feel good, stay out of the comment section if it's not making you feel good, and ultimately limiting your time in the corners of the internet that don't make you feel good. That's why I still to this day don't really go on TikTok that much. I had a year where I deleted it off my phone. Now it's back on my phone, but I probably go on TikTok for a grand total of like 20 minutes each week. I'm not on there because I don't really like it. I think those comment sections are crazy and I just don't want to read it. So I don't. And I think if you are dipping your toes in each of those three ponds, eventually you'll reach a place where you feel, you know, solid enough. I'm phased by things all the time. I'm bothered by things all the time. But I know that I have the tools. I know I have the emotional toolkit to process those things and, you know, get to the other side of it without having my self-image be super rocked. And that just comes in time, I think. But the body shaming online has gotten crazy. You're not losing your mind. It has gotten bananas. And a lot of those comment sections are absurd. But I think there are pockets of the internet that are sort of untouched by people like that, especially on long form platforms where you would need to be like a real weirdo to dedicate that much of your time to getting that far in the episode. You know, like who is listening right now? If you've gotten to this point in the episode after, you know, an hour of me talking, assumably you liked the show. Assumably you liked what you were listening to. If you're getting to this point in the show and you fucking hate my guts, we got bigger problems. So pick your poison, I guess. And you know what? That is actually a fantastic segue into what I wanted to talk about today on the Patreon. So you know what? I will leave it for the after show. If you'd like to come join us, you can join the Patreon, Lover Girls HQ, where I do a weekly bonus podcast after show. We also have a group chat going over on Discord. Last night we did the September live stream. We do lots of fun things over on the Patreon. So come join us there if you are interested. And if not, I love you so much and I will see you in next week's episode. Bye.